So it appears that I was part of this agreement not to get introduced, so thanks, Jamie. But no, only joking.
I'd introduce everyone at the end.
Look, when I was asked to do this session, I was just about to get on a plane for 4 weeks of holiday, and Hayden rang me up and said, "Oh, Warwick, I want you to go onto a panel at the Risk and Regulation seminar. Would you do it?" I'm about to go on 4 weeks holiday. "Yeah, sure, fine, why not?" Came back from 4 weeks holiday and then saw in the program that I was actually presenting a session as well called Communicating with Boards. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be up here talking to a bunch of, generally senior actuaries. I look around the room and my assumption was not too far from being correct, about telling you how to suck eggs, how to communicate with boards. And I'm thinking, why am I doing this? This is unbelievable. Anyway, I thought about it a bit more, and I was thinking about it still when Sean was speaking, and I was thinking about it when Nick and Ignatius were thinking. And I'm thinking, yeah, I can understand it now. Sean listed 3 or 4 times how important he felt communicating the message was in his talk. Similarly, Nick and Ignatius have set me up wonderfully for my talk, indicating that excellence in communication is going to be a key part of our role. So I thought, all right, I'll give it a go. I'll try and tell all of you guys some of the things that I've learned through my career about what I found good, what works in communicating with boards, and how I think some of the changes in the current standards represent a real opportunity to elevate the type of communication and the type of conversation that actuaries have with boards to really focus on the key risks that they should be thinking about, and doing it in a way that sort of, again, adds value to the companies that we're working with and adds a bit of, status to the actuarial profession. Now, I was a bit worried before when I saw the title, because I put a really nice... Is it that way? This way? Oh, there it is. I didn't see that before. So this is something I came across, because when you do presentations, you always like to have a bit of colour and movement, add a few photos on and things to take people away from the dot points on the PowerPoint. And I came across this picture that, again, really spoke to me. And it really doesn't matter what message you have, or how loud you deliver the message, or how important you tell someone this message is really important, unless you've prepared them ready to hear your message, they're not going to hear you. It's going to be like this guy with the headphones on and the actuary with the megaphone trying to tell them, mate, this is really important, you need to understand this. But if you haven't done the pre-work, if you haven't got the relationship built with your stakeholders, they're not going to hear it. So the most important thing, first of all, is what I'm going to talk about, first of all, is setting expectations up front. Through my career, I've seen a lot of different people perform appointed actuary roles, what if you want to call them primary actuarial advisory roles, across life insurance, general insurance and health insurance. And again, I didn't do it as attractively as Nick and Ignatius, but there's clear spectrum of how people go about that role. I prefer to think of myself as trying to be a trusted business advisor, that I have got something to offer the company and the stakeholders within the company about how things they should think about in managing that company. Certainly I've seen people that take a different approach, a more compliance orientated view. Here are the things that we've got to do. I'll do that and that's it. And again, to be fair, as Sean identified, there's a lot of sensitivity about the price that gets charged for advice, and I would agree with Sean, there's no substitute or value that should be limiting good advice. But, you know, that's something that happens. And I think, again, those that work in internal roles as well still find that that's an issue. Where should the actuary sit? In my view, as we've moved forward in time, the justification for doing an appointed actuary role in a compliance manner has disappeared. Both we've heard the regulator today talk, and anyone that attended either the life insurance or the general insurance sections of the seminar this morning would have heard the regulator talk there, that what they're after is an actuary that's providing business advice to the companies they're working for, albeit focused around risk, but business advice. So I think fairly and squarely you should have in your mind, first of all, what you're trying to do. And then once you've decided what you're trying to do, get an agreement with the company that you're working with the board that you're working with, that this is the type of role that I am here to perform. And then I guess if they don't like it, then you've got another decision. Well, is this really the job for me? You know, do I want to put myself in this position when really I don't want to do the role this way? I can't answer that for you. I can't answer that for me in the way I do it. But that's an important question to get right. The second thing I've got up here is there are a whole lot of standard things that are in the current legislative tools that we have to do. And I always find it quite eye-opening and quite refreshing to go back and read those every now and then, because, as Sean said, there's quite some substantial powers and substantial requirements on the actuary in those current rules. And I've just listed a few things up there on the slide. And the first one is notifiable circumstances. Basically, when you read notifiable circumstances, it's anything. Anything that happens within an private health insurer can be a notifiable circumstance. I've got them listed all here. I'm not going to read them out because it is pretty all-encompassing. And number L on that is any event specified in writing to the insurer from the actuary. So we've all got to have a view as to what we need to be notified about over and above what's already in the Act. And for me, that's, again, one of my first conversations when I take on a new role, to talk to the board or the board audit committee. These are the things that I have to be notified about by the company. You, as a company, have to think about, because number J is any event the insurer reasonably expects to have a significant impact on the conduct of the business. So they have to have a think about it. And then also I have to have a think about it and we have to agree on it. And that's often generates a good discussion with the board. And again, sets you off on a good start in setting expectations. After that, you then got the FCR. I was surprised when I went back and looked at the standards around the valuation of the liabilities in the annual accounts. I had to reread it twice because initially it says the appointed actuary is responsible for providing advice on the valuation of the liabilities that goes into the annual accounts. Further down, there's a sort of a caveat. If you're not involved in actually setting it, you're involved in reviewing it and providing advice on that review. I had thought maybe there were circumstances where I hadn't been meeting the standards set by the legislation, but that other section gave me an out, which I have been doing. The development of insurance liability methodologies for the FEAC returns. So, you know, you don't have to do it every quarter, but you have to be involved in setting the methodologies that the company uses. The assessment of the reasonableness of the discretionary margin and the risk margin for financial statements. And again, all good opportunities, all things that would be interesting to the board, or particularly the board audit committee. Getting these established up front, how you want to operate and how you want to communicate to the board is important. Get them used to dealing with you and start establishing that relationship, because you'll need that relationship as things go through the year, as difficult events come up that you have to have discussions about. The next point I wanted to talk about was managing all stakeholders. I copied something off the FEAC website that I thought described FEAC's attitude to this, only to think to find out during Sean's talk, he provided me with some words that were even more powerful about this. And I'm just having a look here if I've got it. I've written it down, but I can't find it. But Sean spoke about the triangle. Where is it? The third link of the triangle. Here it is. That FEAC regulates the funds, actuaries advise the funds, and FEAC and the actuaries have a relationship. And that's the regulator's view. I've always taken a view in my role as appointed actuary that as an appointed actuary, you tread a really fine line between the roles that you play for the board, the roles that you have and the relationship you have with senior management, and the relationship you have with FEAC. All of them are really important stakeholders in what you can bring to the fund. In general insurance, where I spend a lot of my time, the appointed actuary, the words are something like we're a mandated advisor to the board. We have a direct relationship with effectively the chair of the board audit committee. And I run my appointed actuary roles in health insurance in a similar way. I set myself up as an advisor to that committee, to the board. And I need to be able to give them frank and fearless advice. Sometimes that advice might not be what management want me to talk about. And so that means that I have to have a relationship with management such that they're happy that I can raise anything with the board, knowing that I've had that discussion first with them. That if I was going to say something to the board, I've had that discussion with senior management. They might not agree with me, but they've got the opportunity to give their view, and they've also got the opportunity to prepare their response for when it comes. They should never be caught out by me saying something at the board level. And if I think of something that comes up during a board meeting and I feel I have to say it, well, I should have that sort of relationship where they would understand that that was the only circumstance in which it would come up. Certainly with senior management, to get the most out of an appointed actuary role, you have to work day to day with the senior management. You know, you're working with the product people, you're working with the CFO, you're working with the risk people, working with the claims people. So you have to have that working relationship and they have to be able to trust you. And then finally with FEAC, look, as Sean said before and Peter talking, you know, trying not to make it a love-in, but we do have to work day-to-day with FEAC. A lot of our objectives are very closely aligned and they are a great supporter of what we do, and we should also make use of that with our dealings with insurers, and we should encourage them to have the same sort of relationship with FEAC. None of the insurers gain anything by failing, and certainly FEAC don't want an insurer to fail. As the appointed actuary, I don't want any of my insurers to fail. So, again, that close working relationship, being in a position where you can talk about issues and you can get many minds thinking about the resolution and how it's going to be managed rather than trying to do things in isolation, hiding things for fear of what might happen. Finally, I just thought I'd say a few words around some of the key communication tools and how using each of those tools in a cumulative way in building up your relationship over time with the key stakeholders. With the FCR, Sean was talking about, again, the standards of the FCRs improving year after year. I got a lot out of the feedback that I got from Hayden this year on the feedback from my last FCR. I found that really useful. And one of the things I find is, yes, you have to make it based on the main risks for the company, what's important for the company. Get it in the language focused on them. And don't just deliver an FCR and drop it on the table. For me, it's a great document to have a discussion around, and that's with the board and the senior management. One of my general insurance clients introduced about 5 years ago, after we present the FCR to the board audit committee meeting, within a week or two they schedule a meeting with about the next three layers of management. We all get in a room, we present the most important findings from the FCR, and then we have a session around of about an hour where the management come up with ideas of what can they do differently in the business as a result of this information from the FCR. It's a fantastic tool. Last year, the board sat in on that session and they were amazed. They thought it was fantastic. The information, the richness of the ideas that came from management, and that's, again, something to think about. How do you make the FCR relevant to the management and the board in managing their company to the best effect that they can be? Certainly the premium submissions are an important part of the year for boards and insurers and their involvement with actuaries. And I think one of the bits in the new capital management policy around getting involved in pricing philosophy have generally hit, the rubber's generally hit the road during the premium submission policy, where it's some submission where it's sometimes been a reactive discussion around pricing philosophy rather than a proactive pricing philosophy written in the important policies of the company. And again, I think having that discussion with the board around what are they trying to achieve, what are the different ways to achieve it, what are the implications of those different ways, what are some of the stresses and scenarios that might happen, and how does that impact on A, their competitive position, and B, their capital position. The financial projections, again, we heard today in the general insurance section of the seminar around how much the boards really enjoyed the stresses and the scenario projections that came out of the ICAP development that's just we've just gone through the last 12 months. My experience in health insurance has been the same, that it gives them something really tangible to hold on to. If this happens, this will happen to our business and this will happen to the financial results. And it can really generate good discussion. And I think with the new stress testing as part of the capital supervision, we'll get even greater engagement in that process. The capital management policy, agree 100%. This is a great area for actuaries to be actively involved and having that discussion. Risk appetite is something that we've done a lot of in the general insurance industry. It's something that actuaries are, you know, by education and training, are well equipped to play a part in, and I think that's something we should be involved in. Pricing philosophy, getting that written down and up front so it's not thought of later on. Liquidity requirements and investment rules. So, you know, linking your investment policy with your capital management policy and your premium philosophy, getting those things integrated and working to the benefit of the company. And finally, look, when I do my roles, part of the not negotiable is I get an invitation to every board audit committee, I try and attend them all, and I get the papers as well to the board committee. So I know what's going on in the company, and I can give my advice when I think I'm able to contribute. The other thing is, in attending all the board audit committee meetings, the company gets used to talking to their board and you providing information, and you're building up that relationship. So that, again, as I said, the most important time is when the shit hits the fan, and can they rely on you in that time? And they'll only be able to do that if you've already built a relationship. Anyway, that's enough teaching you all to suck eggs and preaching to the converted. Whoops, pretty sure that's in, yeah. But happy to take questions, or we can go to afternoon tea, I guess.